You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name is Tony East. I'm one of the hosts of the show. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. And today, we're back on our kind of normal schedule, flipping the weekly show with the middle of the week show, and we're doing it on Thursday instead because we're bad at planning. But joining me on the other line, we're going to talk some Game 5 of the NBA Finals and a lot of other stuff. My co-host, Adam Friedman. Adam, I haven't talked to you in like 10 days. How are you?
You know, I'm doing well. I feel like we're getting, maybe getting the end of this, but who the hell knows?
The end, I don't know. The end of what? Well,
I don't know. The end of, the end of being complacent, I guess, and maybe trying to like make some want to go back at least. I don't know.
Who knows? The world is changing so fast, but we can relate what you just said to basketball because before we talk NBA Finals Game 5, like we've been doing on all of our weekly shows, we usually talk some news, and the Locked On Podcast Network is doing a best moments of the season network-wide thing. So we're going to do our three favorite moments, I guess, from the season that has happened so far. But a little bit of news, I guess, coming out from last week. So Kevin Pritchard had a Zoom conference with media, and KP and Victor Oladipo did a conference call with media. And of course, Sumner was on Monday's show, but you already heard all that. KP really talked a lot about the communication the team is having, you know, how they're talking every week and how, you know, what the team is doing differently and, you know, how they're using this time. But really the thing that stood out to me, I think the biggest quote and how it relates to what you just said, Adam, is he said the team is preparing as if there's going to be a regular season in playoffs, which I thought was very interesting.
I mean, I feel like at this point we're heading towards an opportunity where there's going to be some kind of basketball. I don't know. It's going to be a weird no
fan. If they get the same day results testing, I think that they can definitely do it. Without that, it's a little harder. But, yeah, well, I think that
like races are getting same day results. So, right. If, you know, if they can – I mean, the NBA will expend probably no – I mean, there's probably no expense they're not willing to pay basically to hit that 70-game mark.
To salvage it at this point, right.
Yeah, I mean, and the amount of money they'll make – from the playoffs because of the lack of what ESPN needs and all the lack of revenue. I mean, I think there's a really high ceiling, even if it's going to cost, you know, I don't know, $1 million a day to do it. It's probably worth it. Right. I mean, that's, if you just got 60 days, that's $60 million.
I think they'd make more just because of demand at this point. So it's totally worth it. But he talked about a lot of stuff. I think some of his stuff about how the draft is different was cool, and how they're communicating and how important it was for them to really focus on the mental health of players who had their regimen taken away was all pretty cool, but nothing necessarily newsy about it to talk about here. The other newsy thing, speaking of the draft, I think we're going to start some draft coverage stuff next Monday on the show. But the other thing I wanted to note from this week, Victor Oladipo spoke with media on Thursday, I believe. He talked about how he converted his garage to a home gym, which you can actually see on his Instagram Live from yesterday. And he has got a gym so he can still shoot and stuff like that. But the big thing he said is he was talking about having his season ripped away and all that stuff. And he kind of said it's kind of a blessing because, quote, to say I was 100% out there, I don't know if I can say that. So I think we obviously knew this isn't like the Vic we know in the past, but it's just interesting that he was playing at, you know, not 100% knowingly. And I'm curious what you think about that.
Yeah. I have a weird question. So, the whole Tom Brady thing, right? For the whole gym and him working out in the park in Tampa Bay.
Yes. Yes.
So do you not think these players can, like, why don't they just buy a gym, right? I mean, like, seriously. I mean,
Sumner told me, if you listen Monday, he didn't have one until, like, very recently.
Well, Sumner makes not that much money. Victor Oladipo makes
A paltry $2.5 million
a year. But, like, Victor Oladipo makes $20 million a year and is probably going to, I mean, be in line for even if he gets someone back to, like, a $100-plus million payday next year, right?
Yeah.
He couldn't afford to go down to, like, I don't even know.
Vic's in Orlando. I don't know what's there, but.
No, but, like, there's not some random gym you can't buy or outdoor, like, park in the neighborhood you can't just, like, kind of buy up, right? Because, like, the whole thing, like, right. You own the property, you go to it. I'm assuming. You just can't have. So like, he couldn't just. I just don't. I mean, maybe I'm being unrealistic, but it feels like he could, if they can't work out, he could buy the Anytime Fitness or whatever.
True.
A certain price or something.
He does have a gym now to get back to 100%, which is important.
Yeah, I just think that's it's maybe taking time. Maybe that's why. Maybe he determined it was better just to try to buy enough weights and his hand on that kind of stuff, because it's been hard to get your hands on weights. I understand that, but I don't know. It feels like you should be able to buy a gym if you're an NBA player that has that much money. I get Evan Summer being like, can't spend all my money on that, but Vic is, you know, a 9-figure NBA player basically.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is. So hopefully he can get more rehab along the way. I mean, that's kind of a pro for every player in the NBA. They can get healthier, but
the problem with him is going to be is that, right, the whole thing that I noticed from when he came in is not necessarily the injury being a big problem. It's his lack, like his feel. He completely lost kind of like, he hadn't been able to play a basketball to get kind of a touch for his floater and his layup. And he was, when he'd go into the lane, it was a little clunky, where like before he got hurt, he was so smooth at closing around the rim and making the right sidestep and just, you know, using his burst, which he had his burst a little bit. And so you could see that, and without a basketball hoop, I'm not sure he's going to be able to get that touchback. And really, I'm not sure that live action is going to be able to get that touchback. So that's a concern.
So the Locked On Push this week, favorite moments from the season. Do you have any games that stand out to you, Adam, for your three biggest moments of this Pacers season?
The one top of the head of Doug McDermott's amazing fourth quarter in Denver.
Oh, man. That was my favorite game. I actually wrote an entire article about that game. Because they were losing by, like, what, 8 or 10, like, early in that quarter?
Yeah, they were going to lose that game for sure.
And then Doug buried two threes and, like, set the screener that passed to Sabonis to tie it. And, yeah, he closed the game over somebody. I forget who. Oh, that was a blast.
I think he didn't. He close over Turner? No. Yeah, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah, Turner came back in with, like, a minute left or something because they were finally winning and they wanted stops instead of points. Yeah, I love those kind of games. Those are my personal favorite games where, like, something unique happens and it works just so well. And in this instance, it was just like every fiber of McDermott's being was was set to destroy on a basketball court, which, like, he's a great shooter, but he was doing everything, like running around screens, passing, dribbling, all that stuff. Not that he was, like, getting to the rim for layups or anything, but – and he literally was, like – the Nuggets were terrified of him shooting. Everyone else could just score. They scored, like, 40-something points that quarter.
Yeah.
In the altitude.
It was – I'm pulling up the game so I can remember what the box score was, but I remember that – that to me, that was the most just, like – it was a game they should have lost on the road in that, like, probably first of a 5-game road trip. And it kind of, to me, it was actually kind of the first – that was the first Domantas Sabonis almost triple-double, or the first time he had over 10
assists. He did get a triple-double, didn't he?
No, he only had eight rebounds. No, I'm sorry, he had 15. I'm totally off. He had eight offensive rebounds alone. So, yes, he did get triple-double. That was his first one. That's where he kind of made that turn from just kind of a points-rebounds guy to maybe being kind of a more of a three-way threat.
Yeah, that game was awesome. That was my favorite game of the year. Do you have a third, or are we just doing – I'll do three, you do three. Or if you have another one, you can throw
it. I've got another one. I've got probably two more I can do.
Yeah, I've got more. Well, one has to be Vic's debut game, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Okay. Yeah, that was the best home game of the season, probably from both a moment perspective and I can't really describe the word I'm trying to use. Just like an optimism, I guess is the right word, like – even if they went on a 6-game losing streak right after, like, you know what, shit's going to be fine. Like, they can find a way to win even when this dude sucks because, A, he could still be awesome in the clutch, and B, that was so freaking awesome.
Yeah, and I think you got to throw in the Toronto game as well. And they beat him in December right before Christmas when they came.
Oh, yeah. Aaron Holiday. Was that both holidays that were good in the end of that one?
At least Aaron Holiday did. Aaron Holiday ended up going 7 of 16 for 19 points. Just Aaron. That was Aaron's best game. That was when – Warren had a pretty nice
night. Aaron's best game was one of the ones I have, which is when they beat the Magic in overtime, remember?
That's right. We were at that game.
Yeah, he hit the three to give them the lead late in that game. That one, we were at that game? We weren't.
You were – I was in like
– Oh, you were in the crowd. That's right.
Yes, I was in the crowd.
Yeah,
yes.
That one was super fun. That one's in my top three just because they were tied and Aaron hit that big three late. And, like, a lot of Aaron's big moments are ones that – stand out to me just because he's such a confident kid that if he's in at the end of the game, I just feel like something special is going to happen. Now, that's, you can –
for the Heat game.
I was going to say you can have your Miami moments, but that one really stood out to me. That one was really fun. Which what? What?
Well, it was right after the Toronto game. Aaron had a great fourth quarter against Toronto. He went against the Heat.
He tried to guarantee himself minutes the rest of the season in Miami.
Yep, and he turned the wrong way, off balance, nowhere near. And then I think when you got to mention – I know the Knicks suck, but when – Barton hit that game winner against the Knicks, basically. That's pretty nice.
Oh, in New York. That's right. That was
Wait.
Am I thinking
the game winner where they tied? He hit the tie at 104, go up 104, 102, the nice like last minute layup, and then what's his name missed the free throw.
Was Randall that the Julius Randle? No. You've got that all wrong. The Pacers didn't score for like 5 minutes at the end of that game.
And what was the game where he had to almost the game? I think in the game before he missed that.
He hit a game-winning layup floater. I do know what you're talking about. Well, I can't remember who they played against though.
Wait, no, because next game was the game he missed, right? There was a game-winning floater he had. I thought it was against New York. Maybe.
No, I remember that because he told us the name of the play in the locker room. That was a home game. The Knicks game was the one where they didn't score. They were up six with about
that's
five
right.
minutes. You know? They didn't score for like 5 minutes, but they got away with it because Julius Randle just clunked the layup at the buzzer. But Miles Turner had like 70 blocks in a minute at the end of that game.
Yeah. So when did he hit that? He hit it against
– I cannot remember. I totally know what you're talking about.
You know, where he went to the lane, hit the layup, and then go up by like one with like 3 seconds left.
Yeah, it was on – and Sabonis was open on the roll. He even talked about it. Oh, man. We're just going to – Talk over each other until one of us figures it out.
I'm going down the
was
list.
Was it the Hawks? They beat the Hawks by one in overtime.
No, but that was the game where they were up four and Trent hit that garbage three at the end.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that one because ironically, I think another the other Trae Young in that game was 44 and a half points. He ended up at 45 because he hit that three.
The Lakers game was cool, but like not a special ending or anything.
Yeah, I thought it was the Knicks game.
I don't think it was the Knicks. Maybe it was, but I don't think it was.
No, he missed the Knicks game, if I remember right.
Was it the Timberwolves?
They
won that game by two.
It might have been. Maybe it was a Timberwolves game.
I think it was.
Okay.
Very clearly a memorable moment, right? We can't even tell you
the game. Okay, I just remember making the layup in. I just remember watching.
Turner's back-to-back game-winning blocks was cool.
Yeah. It was not the Timberwolves. Not the game I'm thinking of.
Yeah. The win in Dallas, the second-to-last game before the end of the year, was really good. Vic was awesome at the end of that against Luka. Man, there were so many. I think besides the two holiday games and the Depot game and the Denver game, I can't really come up with, like, an obvious, like, this was amazing third, but there are a lot of candidates.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a problem. I mean, I think the three at the end of the – when Tebow's return is probably the best moment of the year. I mean, there was no other game. Like, usually, you know, each year there were, like, four or five Depot game winners, but there was not any this time.
Right. All right. I think it's time we take a break and get to the most boring game of this series, even though the Pacers did win. NBA Finals 2000 Game 5. Let's do it. Hey, guys. We're going to take a quick break so I can talk to you about the awesome people over at Postmates. So from an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you watch whatever you're watching on TV these days, sometimes you just need what you want and you need it delivered fast. That is where Postmates comes in. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what you want to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. Or in the case of me and my girlfriend, before that, I love food. We always talk about what we're having for dinner at about 11 in the morning and try to plan it out. But that's why I love Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to the door. They don't just deliver burgers and sushi. They make your life easier with grocery delivery and whatever you can think of delivery to. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it, they can do it all. So for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for the first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit. That's code LOCKEDONNBA. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. The Pacers' second and last win in the NBA Finals was this game. And they just kicked the Lakers in the teeth right from the jump, Adam.
Yeah. By the way, it was against the Lakers with Brogdon's layup.
Okay. Speaking of the Lakers.
Yeah. I mean, this was one of those, I think, kind of games where the Lakers knew they're up 3-1. If they went home, they're going to win this one of the last two. They were kind of just mail it in, I guess.
At the start of the game, I don't think they were, like, really thinking – not that – they might have been thinking that way, but I don't think they were really thinking that way. They actually played pretty well. It was like 9-9 or something. But
the Pacers pulled away late in that first, and that was
kind of my gosh. Reggie, this quarter was like, if Reggie and Jalen have it on at the same time,
they didn't miss a
shot.
Nothing
you can do. Just stop.
They didn't miss a shot in the first quarter, both of them.
Oh, wow. Did they really not?
They were combined 8
for 8. Oh, my gosh, 8 for 8. You're not – wow.
I mean, they're making up for the fact that Reggie clunked that three that he still can't believe he probably missed.
Yeah, they – so that – oh, man, I had no idea they didn't miss. Like, yeah, Reggie scored, I think, 5 of the first 8 points, and then Jalen hit all the ones at the end. So, like, they were really close into like the mid-teens, and it's not like the Lakers' offense was bad this whole quarter. It's just like the Pacers were not letting the series end in this game, and Jalen and Reggie just hit everything, and their offense looked really innovative. Rick Smith was setting some creative screens. Sam Perkins was like dribbling and creating a little bit. He had a nice assist to Dale Davis. Like, they were really doing everything they could to win early.
I honestly think it's one of those games. Shaq, I mean, I just don't understand why Shaq didn't get more foul calls. Like, it was one of those games they just didn't care. And he knew they were going to game six. Like, to me, it was one of those David Stern games where they were like, oh, let's play another basketball game and get more money kind of thing, right? Because, like, Shaq went to the line only six times. The rest of the series, I mean, Shaq's going on like 20 times a game every other game.
Except they called a million fouls on Rick Smits and nothing else on any big man.
Yeah, which I thought was weird in this game. That was because, like, you would look at the style and be like, oh, well, Shaq didn't bring it. But, like, Shaq had 30-something points. Like, Shaq was bringing it. It showed how reliable or how dependent they were, I guess, on the Shaq free throw to win the series or win games or state.
How many did he take in this whole game? You just said
he took six. He took six free throws, which is, like,
he
nothing.
He does get clobbered a lot, but, like, if Shaq got called for every foul on him in a game, he would average like 50 and 20.
Yeah, but you can't call every foul anyways. And then the other thing I would say is this was kind of the game where like Kobe had saved them and basically won the series for them that like he just didn't show up at all.
Shot them out of this game, especially, you know, he played a lot in the first half. He played the entire first quarter and over half the second quarter, 3 for 9. And just his defense wasn't even that, like, young Kobe, what we've talked about earlier in the show, was just an incredibly good defender. Him making Reggie work was often what kept the Lakers ahead in a lot of these games. This time, his defense wasn't even that good, right? We just talked about Reggie didn't miss a shot in the first quarter. You know, Kobe was really not super engaged on that end. He was just really off this whole game.
If I knew better, I would say Kobe probably just thought he won the game. Game four, won the series. He was partying for finals. He's like, well, who cares? We're going to lose in Indiana anyways. Who cares?
He cemented his legacy with the game four overtime. He did not have to.
No, but I think game five, I mean, like, so usually he's that game five can go one of two ways. It can be the imploding of a team because they're just like, oh, we lost. Like, look, the Lakers 4 years later, right? They go down 3-1 in the Pistons. They just implode in game five. They just don't care. Or it's when teams that are mentally tough, like the Pacers.
Or the Pistons even 2 years later against the Spurs.
Yeah. Well,
no. They lost that game by one, remember?
Yeah, but didn't they go to seven that series later?
No, they lost the Spurs in five.
No. I thought that was the Spurs in seven. I don't know why.
Really? 2005 NBA Finals, wasn't it? Spurs in five over the Pistons?
Was it? I thought it was in seven.
Uh-oh, are we bad historians?
No, it went seven. It totally went seven.
Okay, I'm thinking 2006 then.
You're thinking that was the Mavs series, that one.
What the hell, man? The third Pistons Finals.
Pistons never made the Finals the third time, Tony.
What am I talking about?
They went to the finals twice, back-to-back years.
I refuse to be bullied. I don't know what I'm talking about. All right, carry on.
Let's see. Well, hold on. Let's figure it out. So there's 07 is Spurs Cavs. 08 is Celtics Lakers. That goes six, I think.
Okay, right? Game five of Spurs Pistons is what I'm thinking of, but that did only go.
But the Pistons are a mentally tough team, and they shot back in game six.
They did.
So, well,
on the road too.
Yeah. Well, the Pistons were that Pistons team. I said almost won back-to-back titles. I mean, that's how good they were. Yeah. Anyways, no, but like you could just kind of this is the kind of game where you see where the Pacers, despite not being as good Lakers, were not like a mentally weak team. They weren't going to fall.
No,
right?
No way.
And they weren't. I mean, to be honest, this team probably knew this was their last chance as a team to win this, right? Because they in '98 was their best team. I think. I mean, I don't know if you're a kid. Caitlin's piece.
That was so good. Her article.
Like, again, you watching this game, like that 98 team, they should have probably beat the
Bulls.
Get the damn they probably should have. I mean, you look at the series, they go to seven, they're winning the fourth quarter. Like, they probably should have won that series. But of course, Jordan is Michael Jordan, and that's what happened. And then 99, the lockout year screwed them up. And they should have beat the Knicks, but they got beat by them some stupid way. And then the Spurs won the title. And the Spurs weren't even the best team that year, probably. So they just. You know, for three, this is like the last really hurrah for this set of Pacers. Obviously, Reggie would have one more time with the run with the late.
It's hard to eliminate a Larry Bird anything team as he's.
No, but Bird, I think didn't Bird. I'm not sure, but didn't Bird say he was not going to coach after this season too? Wasn't that the whole?
Yeah, that came out. That was like a rumor during the series. And well,
Bird always was a big plant, big proponent of the 3 year thing, right?
Right.
3 years he had, right? So he had Isaiah's coach for 3 years, right? Carlisle coached for more than that because Carlisle was pretty good. O'Brien coached about 3 years. Vogel coached a little more than that. But he was kind of like, he always a big idea of like 3 years and out, and you lose your voice.
So I think another reason I say that, because I think he really jazzed these guys up to the point of like, we're not losing the damn finals on our home floor. Because I mean, every player basically on the whole team played up to what their ceiling would be in a playoff scenario, except for Sam Perkins not hitting shots in this game. And he even played pretty well in general. Everyone played to like, this is what this guy's role is in our rotation. And they were just awesome. Like the first quarter, especially down the stretch, okay, I have the exact stretch written in front of me here. It was 18-13. They only have five. Reggie gets a 3+1. Then Rose hits an off-screen two. Then a three from Perkins. Then Davis hits a two that Sam Perkins creates off the dribble. Then Rose hits a three. Then Reggie gets lit up. They did not miss on that whole stretch. Like, early in the game, get the crowd into it. They were not losing this game.
No, and if you watch Jalen, I mean, this was like – he got her on the rim and he couldn't miss it like for a little while.
No.
It was just like – this was like the, I mean, right, I think after this, Jalen Rose would get a 7-year, 93-minute contract. This was like the reason. I mean, right, I mean, in this game, right, how old is he in this game? He's probably 27 or 28 going into this year. I'm trying to remember how old he was.
Good question.
So he was 28. So, right, if you're looking at a guy who's 28-year-old, he's gotten better and better the last 3 years, you're thinking this guy's like, you know, the next, I mean, the next Kobe version, or maybe he's one of the next great shooting guards in the league kind of thing. And man, did it flame out after this pretty quickly. But I mean, this is the kind of game where he had where it was like, that's why he made all that money.
Yeah. Are we gonna talk about Jonathan Bender's finals debut?
If you want.
Total garbage time, fourth quarter minutes, didn't even take a shot.
Yeah.
This
is might be the peak of his career, right? Did he even play any more games outside of this? Man, what a flame. Dude, that is one of the worst draft picks.
Are you doing a what if on that one?
I'm trying to remember that draft. Was anybody better in that draft?
Great question, man.
I'll say right now, the what if that I'm thinking about is the Granger knee injury one. Right? Because there's I started watching. So today I got stuck in a loop where I started watching some of Granger's 2011-12 season, just the year before he got hurt. And especially that playoff series. When they went up 2-1, he was a big part of that.
1999 was a pretty interesting – this is a lot of, like, very solid players.
So what, Brand went one.
Top 10 of 1999, Elton Brand, good. Steve Francis, good. Baron Davis, good. Lamar Odom, good. Then Bender. And then Wally Szczerbiak, good. Rip Hamilton, good. Andre Miller, good. Sean Marion, good. Jason Terry, good. So the entire top 10, except for Bender, was good.
Yeah, Rip is the one you want there.
Yes.
Because that he would kill you.
Well, there's also Corey Maggette in the teens, Ron Artest in the teens,
James Posey. But they get our test anyway, so that's fine. Right.
Foster, Karolinko. I mean, the
– yeah, but I imagine at the time, like, Hamilton was probably a legit pick for that
one. Oh, yeah. He went 7 for a reason.
That or Sean Marion would have been a really nice piece of this. Right. Like, not this season per se, but in the
going. Bender was the huge home run swing. And it did not pay. He got his finals debut in this game because that's how much they kicked ass.
But the only 18-year-old taken in that –
did they even have one and done at that point?
No, one and done just.
He was in high school. Never mind.
Done 7. Yeah. I think he was the only high school taking that draft.
Yeah, I don't know.
Man, some of those high schoolers are crazy. I mean, right? Because like, was Jermaine O'Neal in the '98 draft? I think he was, right? Or maybe it was the next year.
I think so.
Whenever it was, I mean, after Garnett, there was all this like hype about high schoolers, and it's just kind of crazy.
The draft before, I can't even tell. Al Harrington was high school, right?
I think so. So I'm looking at the next year's draft. I don't know. When was O'Neal drafted?
We're drifting away from this game. We need to talk about this game.
Yeah, that's
fine. The Pacers history lesson is fun. McGrady was high school too. But
I mean, if we do bad draft picks, we should just look at the entire early 1980s for draft picks. The Pacers had the second pick like 7 times and never.
We're doing bad Pacers draft picks?
No, if we were. Watched Jordan Doc. There's 5 times in the 80s where they were either like a lottery pick away from getting like a generational talent, or like traded the pick at the wrong moment to lose a guy. Like they had the pick between Hakeem and Jordan one time. That's how crazy this is.
Yeah. I could do a whole podcast on Pacers draft stuff.
Oh, I could too. So maybe
we'll save it. Anyway, put that one on the back burner. Back to this game. Third quarter, I thought was pretty interesting. The Lakers actually cut it to, I wrote this down. Why can't I find my own notes, Adam? It was as low as 13 after being 19 at halftime. And then Smits gets his fifth foul mid-quarter after hitting two huge shots himself where he kind of flared out to the corner. So at that point, you kind of think they're losing it, especially in a game where, like, the Lakers have nothing to lose, right? So any situation that's adverse is bad, especially in the third quarter. So they bring in Perkins and then just could not stop getting to the free throw line. They hit six and went on a 10-6 run in about 3.5 minutes to get the lead back to 19 and put this game away. And I think that was the key stretch that ended this one, was ironically when Smits, who was pretty good in this quarter in this game, fouled out, or not fouled out, but
no, but fouled out, not playing anymore. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
He didn't play the rest of the game after that.
They didn't need, well, they're up by so much, you're trying to save him, I guess. I mean, the thing I will say is that I don't know whether it was taking him out, right, putting Perkins in, is like that stretch the floor kind of to help Rose get to the line more, get more fouls, or whether it was just because – I mean,
one was a flagrant.
Yeah, but, I mean, Rose took – I guess the guy you took – you're looking at Rose and Jackson took, like, I think 9 free throws, right, in that last stretch.
Yeah, and Crozier, you know, if you want to look at the free throw total of this game, like the Pacers finally getting ahead, yeah, sure, they took 36-21. Crozier took 10 in the fourth when he was just like a wind-up doll on the court, basically. So it was a pretty even free throw game. But that third quarter stretch where they were getting to the line for that brief moment was huge.
Yeah. And, I mean, I guess this whole series that comes back to is like – Smits, unless he's making his jump shot, and I'm not even sure if he's really that effective, right? Because he can't really guard Shaq, and he isn't enough plus an offense to make it worth it.
He was in games 4 and 5.
Well, he wasn't game 4, really. This game, you just said he wasn't, pretty much. You look what happened.
Right? He looked good in this game on offense.
Yeah, but, I mean, the most important stretch, they didn't really need him, I guess. Might be the right
way to put it. That's fair. Yes. Yeah, right. It's like Smits shooting is obviously helpful. But Perkins shooting is another level, and Davis just was a dog whenever he was forced to play center. So it just worked out. And, of course, like I just said with Crozier, the dude did not have an off button at all. So it continued to work out even with Smits out of the game. But I think Smits was, like, threw Shaq off enough on D. I mean, obviously no one had a prayer stopping the guy. But I think he was fine, especially in the last two games. In the first three, especially games 1 and 2, yeah, he was pretty rough.
Yeah, I guess you can kind of see this being the end of the Smits era. I mean, it was last season, or was this year. I mean, you just didn't have it for enough games in a row, I guess.
Right. Right.
And that was kind of the issue. And you can kind of see it in this game. I mean, he had an okay, he had like 12 points, right? That was what
found style. Yeah, it's like they kind of use him as a decoy a lot because he's 7'4".
Yeah,
he was kind of genius.
Yeah, but look on the court, he was the lowest plus minus of any of the
Pacers. Oh, yeah, wow.
Again,
this run included was a big factor there.
Yeah,
that's true.
But at some point, like you're 7'4". I mean, I guess back in the day, the centers were much more like were the ones who dominated the game per se. But like, how much can your 7'4" player work as a decoy if he can't put his back to basket and score?
How much is your 7'4" guy helping you if he's getting two rebounds?
Well, because like the way you use a decoy like him was you'd feed the ball into him and hope that the defense collapsed and have him kick it out, and that's how you use that as like a decoy, right? Like almost like the way they used Dwight Howard should have been used in there, right? Where like Dwight was never a good offensive player, so a lot of it was just get him the ball, you let him get fouled, and hopefully he'll get fouled and make a free throw, or he'll kick it out on a collapse, or they'll get a putback kind of thing. That was kind of the way they used Howard because of his poor offensive game.
Yeah, exactly. You're right about that. That's fair. And to be fair, outside of Smith shooting 5 for 7, which that is a big factor in him sucking, and sucking is too extreme, but him being not as good in the first three games was his shot was gone. That is a big factor in him being useful in his 14 minutes of this game, even though he fouled a ton and couldn't hit the glass.
And we said if he's a David West level shooter, I mean, that's obviously a big leap.
He is.
Yeah, but if he's that
he
level.
He is in these games.
No, I know. No, but I mean, if he's that level throughout the entire series, they probably win this series.
Oh, right. I see.
I don't mean in terms of like that percentage. I mean in that ability, like, you know, at 15 feet, he's going to make the jumper every time, or, you know, enough of the time where it's like,
if he's open at the elbow, someone is freaking out that he is open.
Yeah. Cause I mean, Nick, you remember this Pacer team was like, you would run the entire offense to get David West shot open on the free throw line. Like, that was the whole, cause like, it was such an efficient shot. That, like, you just kept, I mean, that's why the Pacer teams were so good in those. You know, three was that like when everything else failed, you kind of get dumped to Hibbert, who just gets collapsed on, and then you kick it out to West, or he does that, you know, goes in the lane, gets 9 guys on him, and kicks it out. I mean, that was kind of the plan.
A moment I really enjoyed in the fourth quarter of this game is when Reggie checks out and the team knows that they, you know, it's their last home game of the year and they're going to win, and the bench and the crowd is just going nuts, even though there's like 6 minutes left.
Did you see the part where everybody's shaking the beat out LA flag?
Yes, I did.
They show somebody in the, like, the I don't know what you would call it, the suites, I guess, something like that. Yeah. Where everybody's kind of excited. Like, it's the last kind of like hurrah moment of this team.
Yeah. The second quarter was kind of a battle, like, of the two teams playing well. I think the fourth quarter was really funny because it's like all of what, like, I've learned a lot about a lot of these players I didn't know much about from the 90s, but I've learned more about Austin Crozier than anyone.
Because, well, he was really good in this series.
He's been really good every game. And this dude just, like, has shimmies and draws fouls and dives for everything. Like, Crozier was something. And his fourth quarter was hilarious. Like, just now, I have it going in front of me. He just did, like, a shimmy turnaround jumper and drew a foul. He missed the free throw. This is all I missed the game. But it's super interesting.
Yeah. So, if you had I think if you look at the offensive rating, now you can – Bender had the highest offensive rating of any player. But
whatever.
Played. So, Crozier had the best offensive rating of any of the guys who put significant minutes in the series, for the Pacers at least.
For the Pacers?
Shaq didn't even have that high offensive rating.
In the whole series? That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how
in
well.
In this game, Crozier's was 148.
Yeah, in the series.
Over half the game.
In the series, Crozier was 138. Now, B-ball refs – offensive rating is kind of iffy compared to some of the better ones.
Yeah, so it's hard to estimate possessions that far back.
Right. Well, no, and they're not – like, I know NBA stats is much better at doing it than they are.
Right.
Like, just when you look at the numbers, it's better. But, I mean, just in terms of, like – I mean, Crozier had a 71% true shooting percentage for the series.
He was really good.
That's better – right? Shaq was 57. Rick Fox was the one who killed him. He had an 81%. He was a leader.
Very enjoyable game. I mean – I didn't think I would like it that much just because it didn't feel like the Lakers would try, but it was a pretty fun game, actually.
Yeah, to me, if I had to put on a list of games it reminds me of, it's game six of the playoffs 2 years ago where they smoked the Cavs. Remember,
smoked the Cavs, yeah.
The Cleveland got beat in a game they should have – ugh. They played Vic the entire fourth quarter instead of not playing him for 3 minutes for some stupid reason when LeBron cramped up. Ugh, that's a moment they should regret forever probably, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of that series that went wrong.
But that was the moment where
even with all the other things that went wrong, if that one goes right, they still win.
Yeah, it reminds me. Let's see, I'm trying to think of another game six, 2013, where they
the Raptors. You're talking about?
No, I'm thinking game six. Oh, that's actually another good one. Game six, 2016.
The Raptors series, yeah, is the one.
I was thinking 2013 when they play the Heat and they lose game five and go game six and they beat them pretty well, and then Roy Hibbert says that really
bad
no homo joke that would and you know.
A bad juju on the whole team.
Yeah, and sprawled the whole team out the next 3 days. That was a crazy moment. And then another. I mean,
Solomon Hill taking 6 hours to line up an open three.
Well, that was game five, right?
I know, that was the worst though.
He should have. He was so good from three.
He buried it. He took
that 3 months. He could not miss a three. It felt like.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
From
that
like
whole series. That series made Bismack Biyombo and Solomon Hill combined to make $100 million.
Yama, he made 65 as well from that series.
Yeah, that series was hilarious.
Combined Solomon Hill, Yama, he made 65 plus 52, $117 million. Those two guys alone made more money than any Pacer player contract on this year's roster.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Right? The highest contract they have is Vic's at 4 for $80. That's the one they – or no, Brogdon gets 5 for $85 or whatever it is.
4 for $85. Yeah, Mahimi got 64. Salo got 50 and
– two. I think it's a two. He got four for 52, I think.
52, that. Yeah. That's crazy.
Are those guys still on contracts? They're still on those contracts, right?
They're on their last year. All in their last year, yeah.
Jesus, man.
Yeah.
That's what a year to be a free agent.
And always like – we're totally off topic here.
No, but this game reminded me of those type of games, right? So you go back to game six Toronto, game six against Cleveland, game six against Miami. I think you can probably pull one, I'm sure, in the 05-06 era. But those three games where you're like – you're at home. You're going to force one last push because it's a 2-3-2 format. This is kind of that version of a game six. And it was kind of the last like let's not lose in our home court. Let's go out with some dignity and not have the opposing team celebrate in our own locker room.
Right. And they fought like hell in game six, which we'll talk about on Monday, right? Yes. We'll finally get back to a normal schedule. Had to change things up when Edmund Sumner's coming on the show. But Adam, you got anything else today?
No. Like I said, tomorrow I'll do a what-if podcast on Danny Granger.
Yes.
I will say, if you know about screen history, maybe don't ruin it on Twitter. Because you, I mean, that's the point of these podcasts. Is some of them, like, what could happen? What couldn't happen? I mean, even we all know the answer of what the Grand got hurt. I mean, but like go into some more deep.
You could get really far with that one.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That's the thing too about some of these, is that like it depends how crazy you want to go.
Well, how? Yeah, what's? I'm gonna guess the farthest season you could get out to, maybe even now. You could probably get to now.
So he was
some butterfly effects.
2012. So today he would be 36. So. Probably
not even with him specifically on the roster. I'm just talking butterfly effect. I bet I could get to now.
No, but I mean, if he doesn't get hurt, I mean.
Well, I don't want to ruin it. I'll talk to you off recording. Okay. Thank you guys so much for listening. Sorry we drifted away from game five. We're rusty, Adam. It's been like way too long.
It's fine. Like this podcast, we go off the rails sometimes.
It is what it is. We'll be better Sunday talking game six, Pacers, Lakers, and probably a football 5 minutes because the NFL draft is today, which is exciting. So thank you guys so much for listening. And Adam, we'll see you tomorrow.